Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Rural Routes, the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, we do it Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do when we gather is continue to address the issues between rural and urban America. It's a We the People Thursday. Jenny Swigert checking in, Tremont, Illinois. And you brought a pair with you today, eh?
Yes. I don't know how to speak Canadian. Good morning.
Actually, speaking Canadian is easy. You talk in English and finish every sentence with A.
Or say sorry. Sorry. Yes. So we have two firefighters and rescue squad experts who have either watched our volunteer EMTs and firefighters decrease or are currently doing so or working towards trying to find a solution for the issue. So we've got Chief Brandon Bancroft, and I'm going to mispronounce your city. Is it Bastrop? Bastrop, Texas. Mm-hmm. And then we have Henry Roberts, who is from Bellevue, Nebraska. And you are retired, but now working as a contractor for the U.S. Air Force.
That's correct.
Thank you both for your service. So did you see the video that I sent you, Trent?
Did you send me a video?
I sent you a video.
Shoot.
That's okay. So the reason this started being a concern of mine, a year and a half ago, my son was in a fairly severe accident, and it was November 11th. It was the first day that we had snowy conditions, and there was no rescue squad to come to the scene. And I ended up taking him to the hospital myself, which was fine. And I didn't think anything of it until later on. And I was like, wow, what's going on here? And there were other accidents that day, which made everyone kind of shorthanded, but they're already shorthanded as it is. And then last fall, while I was working at our grain elevator, we had this massive, massive fire. And between the time we called 911 and somebody arriving, it took 20 minutes. And at that point, farmers were actually out in the field putting out the fire. And rescue squads will come to scenes like that to provide water and assistance and things of that sort. So after that second event, something that I've always wanted to do, I've always wanted to firefight, but something I've also wanted to do was being an EMT. And so that was kind of the, I guess, straw that broke the camel's back. And I started looking into it, and it's $1,300 for the course and certification where I am located. And I was just like, what? And so I want to dive into that from both of your perspectives. Why is it so costly? Is this something just because our instructors cost so much? What's going on?
Henry, why don't you start?
My perspective is, you know, I started back in this fire industry back in the 80s. And when you came in, the certifications cost a lot less because there was a lot less hours involved, because most of the training was really done out in the field. You kind of got the basics down in class, and then they threw you in the field with trained people. So the classes are getting longer, the requirements are getting taller, and then just like any college, every college you look at, whether you're going to firefighting or business, it's getting more and more expensive. And I think part of the problem is to be an EMT, you have to have a license and you have to have training. You can't just wing it. So they've got you over a barrel. They can charge what they want. You have to pay it, or you don't get the certification, or you don't get the certificate. And what are you going to do?
Exactly.
And let's just clarify too, because there are two sectors here that we're talking about. One is full-time firefighter. The other would be volunteer. And it's my understanding, Henry, that about 70% of the firefighters in the United States are volunteer. And we're not talking about just full paid full-time firefighters. We're talking about even the volunteers out in rural communities, right?
Correct. Yeah. Because the like in Nebraska, the certification goes by the state. So you are certified in the state. Most people, though, do the national registry. So there are certain standards and benchmarks that you have to hit to pass the testing. And so it's pretty generalized, but yeah, so that was part of the problem when I was getting out of the fire service a long time ago was our fire department was requiring us to be a firefighter 2 certification. And then my old hazmat certification was too old. So I had to go get a 40-hour hazmat certificate so that I could qualify for a 40-hour firefighter 2. And that's all on my own time. That's 80 hours of training I had to come up with. All, you know, while maintaining a full-time job and working outside of the house. So that's a lot of a time and a big commitment. Now, luckily the fire department was going to pay for it, but still I had to come up with 80 hours worth of my time. So,
right.
And EMTs, Brandon, is it 220 hours?
I believe so. I haven't followed up in a few years. It's increased since I've left.
Brandon, it's no different in Texas.
No, it's no different here. You know, it doesn't matter what it is. The cost of doing business with anything has gone up. Fuel's gone up. Wages have gone up. The equipment's gotten better. Standards have gotten to where they're more stringent, which makes the courses, the basic courses, of course, more hours, more hands-on. It's just the cost of doing a business, whether it's volunteer or paid. You know, the incident doesn't know any different. The fire doesn't know any different, you know, and in order to, I'm sorry about your accident and no one coming. How far do you live from your closest fire station?
Probably 15, 20 minutes. Yeah, we're kind of in the middle between two towns.
Going 60 miles an hour, which is what we try to preach, you know, most fire trucks is, you know, we tell our guys, running lights and sirens, burning through red lights and things isn't the safest. You can't help nobody if you can't get to the incident safely. So, I mean, even going 60 miles an hour is still going to be a 20-plus minute response. And then you've got the volunteers, which are probably at home farming, tending to their cows, maybe at church, got to leave church, got to get to take mom home or the kids, then got to get to the fire station, then got to get, you know, maybe wait for a second person, depending on what the policy is. Then the truck has to leave the fire station and then make it 15 and 20 minutes out. I mean, we all love living in rural areas and nobody really thinks about how big of a problem it is until we have to dial 911. And then it's a problem because we do live far away. And I mean, I get it. I live 3 minutes from the fire station and I do that because I get a better insurance rating on my house. And plus it's where I work and I have a short commute.
Brandon, why don't you give us just kind of the schematics of the Bastrop Fire Department and what exactly you have under your toolage?
Okay. First off, I work for what is known as an ESD. That's an emergency service district. It's a political subdivision, and we levy our taxes based off of a value on the 100 of property in our district. I'm not for the city of Bastrop. Bastrop County is about 800 square miles, and my district is half of that. So I cover about 440 square miles. So, number one, I know your problem when you've got rural areas. There's parts of our district I could go from one corner to the next and it take 50 plus minutes. I have 440 square miles. I would say roughly, according to the last census, we probably have about 50,000. I'm 15 minutes east of Austin. So I have all the commute coming in, going to Austin. You know, the people want to live out in the rural area. I'm about 10 minutes from a Circuit of the Americas track, which is the first F1 racetrack, I believe, in North America, or at least in the United States. And now they're having NASCAR on May 23rd. We've got the main highway 71 that runs from Austin to I-10 to Houston. So we have all of that traffic coming through on weekends. It's now going to four lanes and overpasses. We run about 1,700 incidents a year. This year, they're increasing by about 15 to 20%. On another note, with why there are delays, and I have a combination department. We have about a dozen paid firefighters, and then we rely solely, I mean, we love our volunteer firefighters. There's no greater asset than someone that's going to, number one, get the training, they got to meet the same standards, because as I said, the fire doesn't know whether, it doesn't care whether you're a volunteer or paid, it's the same. And the same NFPA standards are there for regardless of what you want to call yourself or what your title is. I mean, quite frankly,
I'm going to call you or yourself as muted for a moment. I have to go to a break. Okay. Certified Piedmontese, creating opportunity for cattlemen. Get more information from Marlon Will about being a part of the supply chain. You find him by going to LoneCreekCattleCo.com. I think we've laid the groundwork well. Brian Fitzgerald says that a fire doubles every minute. Wow. Minutes matter. More after this. Welcome back to Rural Route. Trent Luce alongside Jenny Swigert. I think one of the greatest topics we could actually have facing not only rural America, but our nation, our first responders are being limited. Brandon kind of gives us the opinion that maybe it's not too much of a barrier. We'll get back to Brandon. Henry, I had to cut Brandon off, but I wanted to get the lay of the land on what you're involved with and what you have been. I just have to say, by the way, I wonder, because we have two firefighters today, both of them are veterans, and we say thank you to both of you for your service, Henry and Brandon. But how common, Henry, is it that veterans go into public service, first responders? I'm guessing it's pretty frequent.
Yeah, especially here where we live in the city of Bellevue, because we surround Offutt Air Force Base. So we get a lot of people that retire from the military stay here. And as things stand, it's one of those in your blood. You served your country and you have a duty to serve. And being a firefighter is just a further extension of, you know, giving yourself to your community and helping your fellow person. So Bellevue, at the time when we were volunteers, we were a city of about 50,000 people. We ran four fire stations. We had about 140 volunteers. We had some paid staff, which was just kind of secretaries and a fire investigator, an arson investigator, those people. But then we just relied on volunteers. So, and then in 2010, we started transitioning over to a part-time paid program where they were paying us to staff the stations. So Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I'd spend the night at the fire station from 6 at night till 6 in the morning. And some nights you're out all night working, and some nights you get to sleep. And the reason that was driven that way was because of, like everyone else saying, it was getting harder and harder to get that truck out the door. If it took us 6 or 7 minutes to get the truck out the door and you have a 10-minute response, that's a long time for someone to be laying in a driveway, you know, not being lifeless. So we reduced that down to getting out the door in 1 minute, and then that took our times down. And like Brandon was saying, that improves your insurance ratings, so people in the city can enjoy cheaper insurance ratings and prices, because we get a better it's all based on how many pieces of fire equipment you can have on scene and at what time you can do it. And it's just better for the community. That's what they deserve.
I never even, in fact, both of you mentioned insurance. I never thought about that. Your insurance is based on, somehow hinged upon an index of how close you are to a fire department?
The insurance services organization, all insurance companies look at PPC ratings. That's property protection classifications. Mm-hmm. And in order for, of course, that's like he was saying, it's based on response times, how many trained personnel you have, how much water you can haul, or what's the infrastructure in that area as far as hydrants, locations. You know, a lot of times if it's somewhat of a newer community, they'll have, you know, hydrants, and then it's how far is the closest hydrant from the house or business. But we're not fortunate enough to have hydrants on every corner where we're at in our district.
You're just so lucky you have water.
A few weeks ago we were. But we did what they call a water shuttle, and that's where you bring all your water tenders in, and they pick a high risk, a high hazard occupancy, like a school or a nursing home or something, and they figure out what the fire flow is for it, and then you got to prove to them that you can maintain and sustain it for a given amount of time. And that's what we did about 13, 14 years ago. And we've got an insurance rating of a 3 within 5 road miles of any of our 7 stations. And then outside of that, it's a 10, which is, you know, it's not great, but I mean, it's a fact.
Henry, Brandon walked through how he's funded. How's the volunteer fire departments in like Bellevue funded?
So in Bellevue, before we were part of the city. So the city collects the taxes. There was one of our districts was funded by the county. So the county collects the tax from the homeowners, and then they turn around and contract through the city for the fire department. So at that time, when we were volunteers, the city bought the fire trucks. They owned all the equipment. They owned the fire stations. We were free labor, so they didn't have to pay us anything. But we did do a program where our ambulances, when the ambulance rolled out the door, we charged a flat rate. And it used to be $350. I think they raised it to $500 at the time. That money actually went back into a fund. And that fund was kind of a retirement fund. After you did 20 years in the volunteer fire department and you turned the age of 60, you could collect a check of $500 a month. Not enough to live on, but something to thank you for your service. But back when we were volunteers, if we hauled you to the hospital, we sent you a bill. We didn't ever send you to collections. If you paid it, great. If you didn't, we never came after you. So we probably only collected 50% of what we actually billed out. But that went into that fund, and it was actually a state mandate, that fund. It's an unfunded mandate by the state of Nebraska that allows the volunteer fire departments to do that. But then once we went to a paid program and the city started paying us, the city started taking all that money to help pay for the firefighters and the wages and everything. But
Henry, do you remember what your operational budget was when you were all volunteer?
Oh, it was in the millions. It was a couple million bucks. Yeah. I never got involved in that. But
and that was in the 80s.
Yeah, that was in the 90s. That was here.
Well, okay.
Yeah,
it
90s.
Wasn't 2020.
No. It was, and I mean, you know, we buy
the price of apparatus. I bought a new apparatus, a new engine, and 2006, $250,000 compressed air foam system, all the gadgets rigged out, loaded, beautiful rig. I bought the same thing about 2 years ago, and it was over $500,000.
Yeah.
Wow.
We were pricing out ladder. We were running Pierce ladder trucks, and they were, back in the late 90s, early 2000s, you're looking at $1 million by the time you bought the truck and outfit it with all the equipment. You know, in the city north to us is Omaha, and Omaha is a big, giant city. They have 600 firefighters. They're all paid. And they would always make fun of us because we'd have nice equipment. And they say, how can you guys afford all this new equipment? Like, well, because we don't have wages. All the money goes back into the equipment.
It wasn't selling hamburgers.
Right.
Hey, that's why it takes so long to train you guys. You got to learn how to run $1 million worth of equipment.
That's right.
That's a key point. You know, the fire service, regardless volunteer or paid, up until pre-COVID, was still killing 100 firemen a year. Every year, and that's just in the United States. And, you know, that's why all of the mandates, the training, the mission to try to drive those numbers down. And up in the Northeast, one passed away just the other day in that big assisted living facility fire that they had. Henry, did you ever get the opportunity to go to Emmitsburg, Maryland, to the National Fire Academy?
No, I have not been there yet.
Very humbling experience. If you pass through Emmitsburg, stop in, see if they can give you a guest pass to go in and look around. They've got the statue from 9/11 there. The National Fallen Firefighters Foundation is there. They've got the memorial bricks. Well, I've been there numerous times for classes, and every day there's a line of duty death in the fire service. All the flags at the memorial are lowered to half staff. I've been there for a 2-week class, and the flag's never raised.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Earlier this week, the USDA Rural Development branch of the USDA announced that they have invested $266 million to improve rural community facilities and essential services in 16 states and Puerto Rico. And so I asked them, where is funding for volunteer EMT and firefighter training and certification? Does that fall under a different program? And I said the current cost here to enroll is $1,300. I did have a fire department reply, and from the fire chief, volunteer fire chief, it cost him $2,500 to $5,000 to personally be a volunteer fire chief. So it looks like when I went through what the USDA had invested, there's nothing about training, but there are lots of equipment needs that are going to be met in, I'm thinking it was 31 states. I'd have to relook and see. So how outdated is some of this equipment?
Henry first, and I only got 45. Henry, I only got 45 seconds, and Brandon can't do it in 45 seconds.
The rural communities are really struggling and hurting bad. Like us bigger cities, we would donate our old wore out stuff to the younger, smaller fire departments, and they were happy to have it, you know, because it was a 20-year new piece of equipment.
So, Brandon, quickly.
Same thing. They're old and they're getting by with what they got, and we do the same. We give them rescue trucks to nearby fire engines and everything.
Yeah, I don't even want to speak, Jenny, to how infuriating it is that we now have cities and states and government agencies getting trillions of dollars from a stimulus package that didn't go to the people. It's going to building government. Every firefighter, every fire department should be well flush with cash right now instead of putting money into projects that erode property rights for American citizens. Neogen, creating the opportunity to shine a light on your genetic future. Get more details about the DNA fingerprint testing. Know exactly what alleles are present in the animals before you reproduce them. You know, if you got a great boar named Moonshine, you want to know what his possible potential is for genetics. Get her done at neogen.com. We'll be back with the second half of Rural Route right after this. Welcome back to Rural Route, Trent Luce, alongside a whole plethora of people. Jenny, did you acquire some information about funding while we're during the break?
So I was reading just a little bit more about the USDA disbursement. And if I'm reading this correctly, I believe this is part of the COVID stimulus package, which was just passed. And I don't know, for me, that's head scratching. I don't understand why this would be part of a COVID stimulus package. Thoughts on that, gentlemen?
Oh, God. If we could write a book, if we could figure all that out, we'd all be rich.
Well, speaking of which, what was 2020 like in the fire department as it relates to, you know, social distancing and all those other issues that people had to deal with, Brandon?
It was miserable. I think of the added PPE that we all ran out to try to get. As soon as, right before spring break in March last year, we could kind of see things starting to domino and head this way. So we were trying to prepare and write policies. Luckily, I was a Seaburn NCO for a battalion in the military. I've dealt with chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, et cetera. And so I kind of knew that our biggest thing is just going to be, you know, kind of shielding protection, no different than hepatitis, AIDS, all that stuff we've all dealt with and played with for many years if you've been in any kind of emergency response. And so we're trying to get masks. You know, we didn't wear the 95 masks. We don't have many of them. So we were getting these dust shields that we had from when we had one of Texas's largest wildfires back in 2011. So we were rounding up these old expired masks. We're trying to get hand sanitizer, bottles of alcohol. So you can only think all of that added expense playing into it. And then guess what? My cousin came over and they tested positive for COVID. So now this guy that's on duty gets to go home for 14 days, of course, paid, because we don't know what the heck we're dealing with yet. And so we're trying to fill or backstaff those because we got to keep the engines and the trucks rolling because the call volume's not slowing down. And so that's overtime. That's time and a half we're putting in there now that's riding in the seat. So, yeah, it was a fiscal nightmare for something we couldn't, and we're still dealing with it, stuff we couldn't plan for. You know, now I just got a request the other day that somebody's, they're running these COVID clinics where they're giving all these shots and screenings. Well, hey, we need people to come staff this on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Well, goodness gracious, where's that at in my budget? I didn't plan for that last August and July to pay overtime for it. Oh, well, don't worry. The government will reimburse you. Yeah, one day, 9 months from now. I mean, I don't know. It's a nightmare. It's a fiscal nightmare.
Henry, same question.
Yeah, you know, funny little story. So about 4 weeks ago, I called 911 because I had 5 days in critical care in the hospital, had to get my gallbladder removed. And so I still live in the same city I used to be a firefighter in. So my buddies are showing up to pick me up, right? And they come walking in, and one guy is fully gowned. I mean, dressed head to toe. And everyone else stands back. He's the only one that approaches the patient, and he works on me, and everyone else just kind of stands back, where back in the day, we all walked in the house. The only thing we wore were gloves. You know, now he was covered head to toe. So it was the first thing I noticed, because, and then my neighbors, I got two neighbors that got hauled away for COVID, and all the firefighters still outside. One guy went in, and then they brought the patient, they walked the patient out, threw him on the gurney, threw him in the squad, and hauled him away. And everyone tried to stay as far back as they could, try to stay outside. So it's a whole different ballgame, that's for sure.
You make it sound so compassionate, Henry.
Henry, you know what?
He drug him out there. He threw him on a gurney. Go ahead, Brandon.
Hey, the poor guy went through hell.
You know what that policy is called, Henry, right? UYR, utilize your rookie.
Yeah.
Sounds like some fraternity initiation going on in Bastrop, Texas. I don't know.
No, never.
Busted. All right, so back to the issue at hand. Henry, Jenny brought up the whole barrier to entry, whether it be volunteer or not. What exactly, and is it state and federal, or who has the most control? Because you mentioned earlier what the state requirements are, state certified. How does that all come together?
Well, what we did in Bellevue was, if you got on the volunteer fire department, we paid for the training. So we sent you to EMT school and everything was paid for. So there really wasn't much out of your pocket, but it came out of the fire department's budget to do that. Mm-hmm. So the state of Nebraska, you had to be certified in the state of Nebraska, and you actually had a license through the state of Nebraska, but they just used the standard of the National Registry. It was just easier to say, you know, that meets the standard across the nation. That's what everyone's going with. So the state standard became the same as the federal standard. But you can actually go on a website in the state of Nebraska and pull up your name, and it would show your license and had you had any discipline actions against you or been in trouble or suspended or had your license suspended, whatever. That stuff's all tracked publicly to see if this guy is a bad paramedic or whatever. But we started running into a problem where, you know, it's $1,500 to send someone to EMT school, EMT basic. You go to the paramedic program, you're talking $10,000 to $15,000 now. So we had people joining the fire department. We flipped the bill for $15,000 to make you a paramedic, and then you walk. You go get a job as a paramedic, or you get hired on as a full-time firefighter in another town, and we're out that bill. So we started doing things where you had to sign a contract. You either owe us X number of years, or you have to pay back so much money, kind of thing, because we were just – people were coming in. They got smart. They knew what was going on. Got the fire department to pay for it, and then walked. And we were losing tons of money, so we couldn't retain the people. And so that was one of the things we did, was start making them – holding them accountable for that. So,
Brandon, we know that everything's bigger and better in Texas, but do you have a better story?
No, he's correct. I mean, ultimately, I mean, there's some people out there these days that just are there, that want to take it, that want to help. But with the cost of living for everyone going up, I mean, recruitment, the old days where you had, you know, 100 volunteers, like Henry said, they had in Bellevue. It's, I mean, they're few and far between, you know, that you can get them, but the cost of the national standards is what most of the fire trainings, it's hard to reduce that standard when there's already a national standard, you know, like NFPA puts out for fire training. But it's tough. I mean, there's plenty of grants that reimburse the training for us in Texas. The State Forest Service is a huge advocate on on rural fire department training and funding. So we get that, but definitely turnover is a big deal, you know, and I mean, once if she was to go get the EMT training, you know, then what? She's still going to have to do that, do those services under a medical director, which would either be an EMS division or the fire department as a first responder. So, I mean, I guess the first step is if you feel like it's a problem, the first step to fix it is to go join and try to be a part to help fix it.
So, Brandon, Michael's got a great question. What is the retention in emergency services for, let's just talk about rural areas?
Retention. Well, there's a huge push on recruitment for one, trying to see what motivates those that are getting in high school or coming out of high school. We try to grow our own, so to speak. We try to go out and get the kids that are in the local community that are being seniors or get and see if we can't spark up some interest there. And once we get them, we bring them in. You know, we give them a little piece of it just to make sure that it motivates them
right
before we invest a 463-hour firefighting NFP or Firefighter 1 and 2 program and then an EMT program. I've had many we put through school that are not here and didn't complete it and didn't finish it. And, I mean, even if you got a contract, Henry, I mean, you said you didn't send somebody a bill when you hauled them to the ambulance. I mean, how much money did it cost you to get an attorney to go get that $2,000 fire school training back? I mean, it's at what point's what it's worth, but I mean, it's just, yeah, it's tough.
Retention, yeah. Henry. I'm reluctant to call Bellevue a rural area, but you're close to a rural area.
No, we, you know, we pull from a big city. We just had to start getting more creative with back in the day when we had plenty of people, you had to live within 2 miles of the fire station to even join the fire department.
Really?
And then we started loosening up, and then we started allowing people to programs where you could live outside the city of Bellevue. You could become a Bellevue volunteer firefighter, but you just had to spend so many hours in the station and make yourself available. Because we had people that worked in the city and wanted to volunteer. They just weren't there at nighttime. And daytime was one of the hardest spots to get people because everyone's out working. Nighttime was a lot easier because everyone was home. So you start getting creative. We switched to a program where we would bring a lot of women on for EMS only. Because we have a lot of nurses in the area. They say, hey, I don't want the firefighting part. I just want to ride in the ambulance. And I'm a nurse and I already know mm-hmm. about the medical field. So we started changing programs up for that to bring on rescue only, we called them. And they had a blue helmet, so we knew not to grab them and throw them in a fire because they weren't trained for the fire. They were only trained for EMS portions. So you have to get really creative and go out and hold events and try to attract and recruit people. So that's where we're at.
And I assume, like Brian speaks of here in the comments, that there's a lot of generational. If your dad was a firefighter, you're more apt to be a firefighter.
Correct.
That is correct. My uncle's a retired firefighter.
Yep. My dad was a firefighter. He did 30 years. I actually grew up in California, north of San Francisco. And I actually joined out there at age 16. You could join the fire department. It's a small rural town in California. And we carried pagers. We got out of. We went to high school. If you had good enough grades, you could leave in the middle of the day. And saved me. I almost flunked a biology test, and I was lucky enough to have a call come in. And I had this gut feeling. I had this gut feeling that we're going to get a call. So I read ahead on the test. I had no idea what I was reading. Call came in. I went home that night. I studied everything I read over, and I went back and aced that test the next day.
Yeah.
With today's technology, think of how good we could have got. We could have missed all them big tests.
Yeah.
All right.
So here's a question about insurance, or do we need to go to a break?
Yep, you can ask that question about insurance when we come back on the other side. Before I let you go, I want to remind you the Stand at Paxton County continues to be available on Netflix. It brings to light the challenges that we have in animal ownership, maybe a little ahead of what's actually happening. It's been happening to people all across this country. We're just not paying attention. The Stand at Paxton County will bring your attention to it. Get more details on Netflix. Just watch it. Again, the stand at Paxton County. Last segment of Rural Route right after this. Welcome back. The Rural Route. The dog barking during the break wasn't the only dog barking.
I apologize.
Yeah. For Brandon or for your dog?
For the dog. Actually, for children not following directions.
All right. You're going to ask an insurance question. We're back.
You know, I hadn't considered the home ownership cost, premium cost aspect of insurance. What I do wonder about is, are you charged insurance and what does that cost? And is it separate from fire departments and EMS? Or explain how that works.
Yes, we...
liability.
Yeah, all of our buildings are insured just like a commercial building. The good thing is there's a volunteer fire insurance organization. It's up in the Northeast, and they give us pretty good, decent breaks, you know, as far as the fire stations are concerned. Automobile insurance we have. We carry general workers' comp on all of the firefighters. So if a volunteer or paid, whoever it is, gets injured, they get, you know, and they can't go to their real job that they make more money at. You know, we have a workers' comp program there. We've got an accidental death and disability. The state has a line of duty death benefit. And then our pension system for volunteers also kicks in. So, I mean, yeah, as with anything, you know, and especially this day and age, liability and everything.
What about liability as far as protecting you from a patient that you've picked up and trying to sue the fire department?
Well, first off, I don't run any EMS, and I'm proud of that. So I'll let Henry answer.
The city would cover, you know, if you were to get sued, they're going to go after the city because the city had more money. But a lot of us carried our own million-dollar policies, and they're pretty inexpensive to get. But it was just a second factor because a lawyer could come after you and the city. And so we, yeah, a lot of us went and got our own little private insurance policies just in case we did get sued. But fortunately, none of us ever were. But some of the fire chief, you know, we had a death one time and they were suing everyone. They were suing the fire chief. They were suing the fire department. They were suing the city. You know, we also had an association. We used to sell raffle those pickles that you can buy for a buck. You know, you peel them off and win money. We would sell those as an association, and that money went into a fund. So if a guy got hurt and was out for a month, we could pay his wages for him, or you know, whatever workman's comp didn't cover. If you made $1,000 a week and workman's comp paid $700, we would give you the $300 just so a guy didn't have to lose money because he got hurt, you know, being a volunteer firefighter. So we always try to help the family out. Make sure they didn't suffer financially. And in the state of Nebraska, it's the same thing. They carry a line of duty death. If you die, they pay a bunch of money. And we also have a couple life insurance policies that you get that the fire department paid for the volunteers.
So, Henry, along those lines, kind of the summation of where we've been all day, how short is staffing at either volunteer or paid positions?
The volunteers, it's getting harder and harder, and there's less people around. And that's kind of twofold. People are just busier and don't have the time to commit. And in a lot of the younger generation we were seeing, they're expecting to be paid for what they do. And not a lot of people just want to volunteer anymore. And that holds true even in rural communities. Like, look at the county fair. It's getting harder and harder for people to give up their time to donate for these events, and let alone the fire department. So it's getting harder to get those people. And then in the paid industry, it boils down to money. If you don't have a lot of taxes coming in, it's hard to pay the firefighters' wages. And so, you know, you try to maintain a proper staffing, but it happens. And you get hit with COVID or illness and a firefighter's out. And like Brandon said, you got to pay that guy overtime or someone else overtime to cover that shift. It gets expensive really fast.
So before I go to Brandon in that same question, Henry, I want you to take it one step farther. We've talked about, and Jenny brought up, that it just costs prohibitive to do this, even if you're getting compensated for it. What I'm hearing from volunteer firefighters is it's not the money as much as it is the time it takes to remain certified, even if you're not just new, just to remain a volunteer firefighter from year to year. Is that a real barrier?
Yes, yeah, that's correct. We, in the city of Bellevue, when we were volunteers, at least once a week, we were down there training. Every Monday night was some kind of training that lasted 3 or 4 hours. And then you have so many calls per week. You know, we ran 3,000 calls a year. So you have a lot of calls. And so that's time. And each call could, you know, if you go on a long call, it could be a couple hours out of your time that you're away from your family and doing that. So it's a big, we probably spend on 10, 20 hours a week easily just covering the basic if you have a light week ahead of you.
See, that's a commitment. I'm not saying you should be unprepared, but that's still a barrier to people getting involved. All right, Brandon, from your perspective on all those questions.
There's a bunch. What was the first one?
How short? What is the actual terms of how many people you're short, maybe at Bastrop or you know of people around the country?
Well, as a fire chief, my main nightmare was, you know, when the bells hit, who's coming? And with everyone at home. And so we had to just get creative with it. I didn't want to play that guessing game. And so we just tried to start figuring out. Of course, like Henry said, money is the main factor on kids. They want to know what's in it for them these days. And so we came up with a staffing incentive so we could definitely get trained bodies at the fire station. And if I'm going to put the PPE, the bunker gear for a fireman these days from head to toe is probably about $3,500. And then you got the training program. I mean, but next, then you give them a radio and a pager and uniforms. Next thing you know, we're in this person, you know, 10 grand. So then it's more, well, what are you going to do for the fire department or the community? So we try to make them staff or meet a minimum percentage of the call volume for their station assigned to and things like that. But even then, you know, there's a standard. You can't go join the Lions Club and not make any meetings or any trainings. And, you know, it's just, you just got to be as creative as you can. What was the next one?
And the next one is that I continue to hear that the time spent to remain certified or to become a new one, it's the time aspect that prevents people.
It is. I mean, no one, I can't tell you what the next incident is or how long we're going to be on it. All I can tell you is that it's going to take a handful of us at least to get it done. The good thing is with certifications, you know, it's about 20 hours a year. With today's technology, there's you can get as creative as you want with an online training program. You know, they call it CEs, continuing education. But you want them to come to the meetings. Nothing better than having, you know, the whole department in a training room and getting the training there, you know, one-on-one and then doing the hands-on as opposed to online learning. But the kids today, some of them, we've had to get creative and do our basic programs online because some of the younger generations coming up, they're really good at that and they can get through it.
Brandon, as a chief, who do you reply or who's you answer to?
I answer to a 5-person board. It's our board of commissioners, and they're all appointed by the county judge and the county commissioners on a 2-year term.
And I assume that's a volunteer appointment.
Yes, and ultimately, I mean, I answer to the community. I answer to all the taxpayers. Yeah.
Okay. What, Jenny?
Let's talk solutions. I mean, we've laid out, there's obviously issues and challenges here. What can we do? You know, this is we the people. What can we the people do to try to solve some of these challenges?
Henry, you go first.
Fundraisers, you know, community events.
I suppose in the rural communities, it's really just being supportive of the fire department when they hold fundraisers, pancake feeds, whatever they do to raise money, getting everyone to chip in. That's about the biggest thing you can do. For us here in the city, it's harder because most people in the city don't really care. They just want someone to show up. They don't, you know, give much concern to what the volunteers are doing or quality of life for them. So that's a good question. I mean, I don't know if there's really a good answer for that, truly, to tell you the truth.
I think we put Brandon in charge of recruiting.
Yeah, go get an application. Fill it out. Go find out what your local department, if they are paid or volunteer. Most people don't care until they dial 911, and then it's a problem. Why did it take 20 minutes to get here? Go get involved now. Fill out an application. Figure out what their standards are. If you got a youngster at home that's coming up, 16, 17, 18, and you got a volunteer program, go get them involved. That's the problem. Not enough people are filling out applications.
I've done that, but the problem is I don't have $1,300 to go take the course.
So you're telling me your volunteer fire department won't take anybody in with no training, no nothing, and then prep them and get them prepared to do something? They want you to have that first?
That was my understanding, yes.
Well, then get involved and get the chief out of there and get somebody in there that's going to go get some folks that want to come do something. We have a job for everyone. We just need you to be there when the job is needed.
Hey, good to know.
And I can speak for, you know, our community is nothing like the size of what any of the three of you are in. We have, what, 3,000 people on a good day in the county. And we had a family that left the county, and I remember most people were like, well, we didn't want to see them go, but my goodness, that's our EMT crew. What are we going to do? And when one family left, it was like everybody was worried. And I think that that continues to be a problem. It's just, it comes back to what both of you have described, whether it's a county fair, volunteer firefighters, it tends to be the same few people that show up to get the job done. And somehow we need to spread that fire, pun intended, to more of the people to help prevent things. All right, we are in the last minute. Brandon, your summation for us today.
The volunteer fire service is few and far between. 75% of the United States is protected by them. Go to get involved with your local fire department. Get an application. Ask if you can help. If you see them on an incident, go get a case of water and come over and pass it out. I mean, something like that. Then the chief might see that, hey, she really is interested in this. We could use someone. Let's give her a chance. You'd be surprised how many of those departments are still brother-in-law, hey, good old boy system when it comes to who's being appointed and elected.
Henry?
Yeah, and pull over to the right. When there's flashing lights behind you, you pull to the right.
Absolutely.
That's advice of the day.
Right.
You don't know how many times people complain it took forever for the fire truck to get there, but it's because no one would pull over. We couldn't get through an intersection, or we couldn't get down the road because people won't pull over because they got the radios on, headphones on, or they just don't care and they don't pull over. So pull to the right.
That's a good suggestion for the entire country. Pull to the right. We have successfully journeyed down the road connecting rural and urban America, hopefully inspired that next generation of volunteers in the community. The community is what you make it, folks. Show up and help. Be a part of the solution, or you are the problem. For all of us, we remind you that all roads do lead to a rural route.